I'm Andrew Wheeler, staff member with the Iowa Farm Bureau Communications Team. As part of the policy development process for 2017, the Iowa Farm Bureau Resolutions Committee has identified livestock insurance programs in the Farm Bill as an important topic for discussion. The Iowa Farm Bureau policy development process involves providing information to farmer members, gathering member feedback throughout county farm bureaus, and ultimately developing policy statements that capture the grassroots opinion of members at the voting delegate session in September. Iowa Farm Bureau staff has put together this recording to help inform members about the current livestock insurance programs in the Farm Bill, evaluate the effectiveness of these programs, examine potential improvements to these programs, and provide the pros and cons of those potential changes. This podcast will feature John Newton, economist for the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation, and Keith Johnson, an insurance agent for the Farm Bureau Financial Services, to hear their perspective on this topic. We'll start out our conversation today with AFBF economist John Newton. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, John?
Well, first thing, I just want to correct you. I'm not an Iowa guy. I used to be in Illinois. I did my doctorate at The Ohio State University, where I studied ag economics and risk management programs. I did spend a little bit of time after my PhD on faculty at the University of Illinois on the Farm Doc team. Did a stint on the Senate Ag Committee working on the last Farm Bill. And my wife and I, we moved to D.C. back in 2015, and I joined Farm Bureau back in July of 2016.
Thank you. So, John, can you give us some background information on livestock insurance programs that are currently available in the Farm Bill and how those programs compare to Farm Bill crop insurance and commodity programs?
Well, you know, Kevin said we can be pretty frank on this call, and I'm going to be as frank as possible right now with respect to livestock insurance. And the fact is, livestock is a $150 billion industry when you look at the farm receipts for cattle, swine, hogs, dairy, et cetera. And yet livestock is limited to a $20 million cap on insurance products. Now, that includes any premium subsidies that farmers may receive, as well as the A&O on these products. So frankly, in my opinion, livestock just doesn't have the resources dedicated to it that your major field crops do on the crop insurance side. Crop insurance and crops are similar to livestock. It's a $150 billion industry when you look at receipts from corn, wheat, soybeans, et cetera. And FCIC outlays on crop insurance are anywhere between $5 and $10 billion, that's B, billion, per year. And, again, livestock capped at $20 million just doesn't make much sense when you think about the scale of that industry.
Okay, so can you tell us what risk management programs are available to a livestock producer today?
A livestock producer has a few options available to them. The first is going to be your LGM program. That's your livestock gross margin insurance. That's available for cattle, swine, as well as dairy cattle. And the way LGM works is it protects the difference between the livestock price, whether that's cattle or swine, or in the case of dairy cattle, the milk price, and the feed cost. For LGM, cattle and swine, the feed costs that they monitor are going to be the corn prices, whereas on the milk side, the prices that they include are going to be corn and soybean meal. And excuse me, I think soybean meal is also included on the swine policy. So the LGM policy really looks at a margin and provides margin insurance for the particular animal. LRP, unlike LGM, is not a margin product. It is a price product. So it's available for cattle, swine, feeder cattle, and lamb. It's not available for dairy. So dairy only has a margin program. LRP, a price-based program, is available for fed cattle, feeder cattle, lamb, and swine. And then finally, the last product that's really taken off in recent years with the last Farm Bill is the Whole Farm Revenue product. And Whole Farm Revenue is an insurance product that covers your revenue for a full year. I believe it's based on your tax returns. But it does allow you to cover livestock products as well as other commodities that you may produce on the farm. So there's three products available to livestock producers. But again, I go back to these three products and these livestock compete for that same $20 million pot of money. And that makes it really challenging for a livestock producer to know that they've got consistent risk management tools available from USDA that they can place at a particular point in time.
All right. Well, thanks for that information, John. And I know you touched on it briefly, but a common question that our members have is, does the federal government provide premium support or subsidies to buy those products you mentioned?
So for LGM dairy, you can get a premium subsidy, and the premium subsidy that you get depends on the deductible level that you choose. So long as you cover at least 2 months of margin protection under LGM, at a $0 deductible, you get an 18% subsidy on your policy. The higher your deductible, the higher the subsidy. I think the subsidy caps out at about 50% of the premium cost for LGM dairy. For LGM cattle and swine, there's no premium subsidy at all. So farmers and ranchers purchasing a cattle or swine contract pay the full actuarial sound value of that insurance product. On the LRP, again, that's available for fed cattle, feeder cattle, lamb, and swine. There is a base level of 13% for fed and feeder cattle, and then on swine you can get a 20% premium subsidy. The lamb policy under LRP, frankly, isn't consistently sold either. So there are times when RMA will say that we're not offering the LRP lamb policy due to a lack of market information out there to set the prices.
All right. What can you tell us about the number of farmers that are using these products?
Across the U.S., we can look back over the years since these products have come online, and just on the LGM alone over the years, probably since 2008, you've seen about 15,000 policies sold. And again, based on that subsidy structure, a lot of that's going to be on the dairy side. So dairy's seen 12,000 policies sold under LGM. Swine, about 2,000 policies. Cattle is less than 1,000 policies sold. And remember that cattle and swine don't have a subsidy at all. So farmers are bearing the full cost of that insurance product on the cattle and swine side. Dairy, they do have a premium subsidy. I believe it was added in maybe the 2009 or 2010 insurance year. And once they added the premium subsidy on the LGM dairy, it really took off as an insurance product. So 12,000 policies sold on the dairy side, covering close to 2 to 3% of the U.S. milk supply under LGM dairy. If we look at the number of animals that these policies have covered, they've covered several hundred million animals, close to $5 billion in liabilities have been covered under LGM. But then farmers have paid $132 million in premiums. That's including their premium subsidy. But the indemnities on those LGM products has only been about $58 million. So the loss ratio for LGM still hasn't hit one. It may do it in a particular year or in a particular region, but in aggregate, it's still well below what farmers have paid in terms of premiums. For Iowa specifically, when you look at LGM, been about 2,600 policies sold, covering about $450 million of liabilities. Iowa producers have paid close to $20 million in premiums and seen about $21 million come back in the form of indemnities. The most popular product on the LGM side for Iowa is the LGM swine. Iowa has about 92% of the LGM swine policies that were sold over the last few years. So, and that, given Iowa's position in hog production, that makes a lot of sense. On the LRP side, you've covered about, and again, remember, the LRP has that 13% subsidy on cattle and 20% on swine. Feeder cattle being the most popular product, there, and you've seen about 70,000 policies sold with about $3 billion in liabilities. Farmers have paid, including the subsidy, about $80 million in premiums, and then seen indemnities slightly more than $100 million over the last 5 or 6 years. So they have seen a positive net benefit on the LRP product. Again, part of that's because it does carry that subsidy percentage. Iowa specifically, when you look at the LRP, the most popular product for Iowa is going to be your feeder cattle, followed by fed cattle. Swine has about 500 policies. Their total liabilities in Iowa, $166 million. Farmers have paid a little over $5 million in premiums and seen about $3.5 million come back indemnities, so the loss ratio hasn't hit one yet on LRP for Iowa. I think on the whole farm side, you know, again, this is a relatively new product, fairly intense process to get a policy started due to the amount of tax records and farm information that you need to supply to the agent. But we've seen about 2,000 to 3,000 policies sold each year. 2017, we had 2,500 policies, $5 billion in liabilities. Farmers have paid nationally close to $300 million in premiums. The indemnity, you know, because it's a full year program, it's too early to tell what the indemnities would look like for the 2016-17 policies. But the 2015 policy had $50 million in premiums and saw 66 back in indemnity. So did have a loss ratio above one there. For Iowa, Whole Farm hasn't taken off as well as some of the other policies, probably because you have, you know, so, you know, 60-70% of the land area in Iowa is in row crop production. So, you know, you have RP policies that are already available in Iowa that work very well for grain farmers. So Whole Farm hasn't taken off that much in Iowa. You have about 20 policies sold a year, less than $1 million paid in premiums. And again, it's a little early to make any call on indemnities or the loss ratios yet for Whole Farm in Iowa.
All right.
And that really covers kind of the national statistics with these three products that are available.
Okay, so John, what problems are farmers identifying with these products, or what potential limitations are there on the effectiveness of these products?
Well, you know, I mentioned one earlier, and that's one that we've identified, you know, Farm Bureau members have identified through the policy process, that the $20 million cap on livestock just does not reflect the value of the industry. So that's, you know, that's one of the biggest challenges. And because they have that cap, a number of things have happened. One, you don't know if you're going to be able to get a policy put on because you don't know if the money's going to run out. So you can't consistently think that these products are going to be available when you want to purchase it. The second is, you know, with a $20 million cap, that really stifles innovation in livestock policies. What incentive is there for a private company to develop a livestock product and deliver it to market when you're competing with such a small pool of resources? Even without a subsidy, you can't sell a product because you have to have money for that A&O. So that $20 million cap really limits the ability of farmers to actively use these products and consistently use them, as well as stifles innovation. There's no incentive for a company to develop a product if you're competing in this very small sandbox of $20 million when it's a $150 billion industry. So that's probably one of the biggest ones. The second one, you know, that I hear from farmers is just complexity. You think about, and I'll pick on dairy a little bit. You've got to choose how many months to cover, whether you're going to pick 2 months all the way out to 10 months of a policy. You got to pick your feed components, how much corn, how much soybean meal you want to use, how many hundredweight you want to cover. And you got to watch the markets. You know, you can't go in and take advantage of a product when the markets are high. You got to do it on the last business Friday of the month. So to integrate these products into a risk management strategy is complicated. It can be done. You know, certainly you spend time, you sit down, you figure out all these parameters and how to make it work for you. But it is rather challenging. And then understanding how indemnity is even triggered in the first place. You know, dairy farmers need the cash flow all the time. They're producing milk every single day. Tankers are coming to pick up milk every single day. They get paid twice a month. And they put an LGM policy on for 6 months. If they have a bad cash margin environment the first couple months, but then it improves later in the policy, it can wipe out any potential indemnities that the farmer may have been eligible for in those earlier months or whenever they may have occurred. So, you know, understanding how these products actually work and what triggers an indemnity is definitely an issue on the complexity side. I think marketing limitations is obviously a big issue when you get over to the cattle and the swine, the number of animals that you can cover, the length of the policy period, you know, how well does that fit with the modern cattle and swine operations that we have across the country? How well does that fit with some of the vertical integration that you see in these sectors? So I think, you know, that's an issue, is how well do these products actually fit what's happening in both the market structure of the industry as well as their market prices. Cattle and swine have conversion rates on animal weights, whether those reflect what's happening in the operation is very important. And I think one of the other ones that is a challenge is none of these products really allow a farmer to address their basis risk. Again, I'm going to go back to dairy. When you look across the country, there's not a dairy farmer in the country who gets the same value of milk as his neighbor. Farmers in Iowa are paid based on the components of milk that they produce. That's going to be the fat, the butter, or the butter fat, the protein that's in the milk. And so if you have higher component levels, your milk, the value of your milk is higher. And LGM is a flat 3.5% butter fat, and so it doesn't reflect the farm's basis risk. And that's something that you do see as a challenge for people that have invested in different herd types or different product characteristics. So if you're a grass-fed operation or you're a Jersey operation or any type of alternative production practice, it may not fit the value of the commodity that you're producing on the farm. So there's a number of challenges with these products that make them, you know, not impossible, but just increase the difficulty of integrating them into a risk management strategy.
Okay, after hearing those, we've got a couple follow-up questions for you, John. What are some potential changes that could make these programs better, and what are the pros and cons to those potential changes?
Well, I think the first thing that needs to be done for livestock, and I'm going to go back to that $20 million again, is Congress needs to recognize that livestock is an equal partner in the ag economy with field crops. And needs to have the resources allocated to it to reflect the value of the industry. That $20 million cap needs to get lifted. It needs to be higher. How high, you know, is the question, I think, and that's the pro is it needs to get lifted. The con is we're in a tight budget environment, and we recognize that. President Trump and his skinny budget proposed cutting USDA budget discretionary spending, mind you, by 21%. So to go to Congress and say we need more money for livestock insurance, we need more money to fix cotton in the farm bill, we need more money to fix dairy in the farm bill, we need more money for, you know, a disease vaccine bank, we need more money for CRP. You know, we've got a long list of things that we're asking for, and that's going to be the con, is that it, you know, to increase this cap is going to cost money, but frankly, if you're going to protect the livestock sector, you're going to have to spend money. So I think that's the first and foremost one of the best changes that we can do is getting that cap raised. It'll allow producers to know that they can go in and buy these products. They won't need to worry about availability or financial constraints as they do now. And then also sends a signal to the private industry that says, you know, hey, there's opportunity now to put your thinking caps on, and can we create something that works better? And nothing is better for business than competition. allowing private industries the opportunity to build products that may work for livestock producers, to capture the risk that they're facing, and fill in any gaps in risk coverage that the existing programs may have. And I think raising the cap sends a signal to the market that it's time to start developing some livestock tools that work better for the sector. Whether that's going to be price or margin insurance, or maybe there's a creative way to measure the risks of a poultry producer losing a generator and losing his whole barn of chickens. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we can do if only we had more financial flexibility to build these things out. I think the second thing that we could do if we want to get folks interested in these products, you have to subsidize it. LGM cattle and swine don't have a subsidy at all, so maybe we can address what level of subsidy they have and do the same thing on the LRP, raise the subsidies from 13 and 20% to some higher level so that farms are more actively using these products. But again, the con there is the budget environment that we're in. Raising the subsidies means we need more money. It means it's going to take a bigger chunk out of whatever the cap is raised to. So, you know, that would be the con there. And then I'll talk about what we just did. So Secretary, or soon-to-be Secretary Perdue, had his confirmation hearing a few weeks ago. And we sent a letter along with a couple other organizations that said essentially this. We understand that a dairy cow is livestock, but milk is no more of a livestock than eggs are livestock. Milk is a commodity that's produced from a cow. It is not a livestock product. So we think that milk should be taken outside of that livestock cap. It should be in its own category or fall under the standard SRA agreement, such that it's not limited by the $20 million cap that we currently have. Still raise the cap, but move milk outside of it. Recognize that it's a commodity. That could provide, you know, frankly, when you talk to dairy farmers across the country, they're in pretty bad shape. Milk prices have fallen 50% from where they were. Just like, you know, cattle and swine prices are down as well, but milk prices have fallen considerably. The safety net that they thought they had in the Farm Bill, the margin protection program, has not lived up to expectations. And producers have actually voted with their feet on that, and only 2% of the U.S. milk supply is covered at levels above cat coverage for MPP. So dairy farmers need a risk management tool that works, and those that have taken the time to learn how LGM works have found it to be a very useful risk management tool. So when we sent that letter up to the acting secretary of USDA to move milk, that would go a long way to providing some immediate relief on livestock insurance for dairy farmers. And Senator Stabenow in Perdue's confirmation hearing, that was the first question she asked him was, is milk a commodity? And we think that milk is a commodity and that milk's not a livestock. So those are some of the changes on the horizon. The milk as a livestock, you know, that's something that can be addressed sooner rather than later, you know, because that's going to be a secretarial designation. The secretary has the authority to define what is livestock, and milk is not specifically referenced as livestock in the crop insurance title. You can cover all sorts of products under the SRA, and we believe that milk is a commodity and should be recognized appropriately. So, you know, those are the things that we're looking at. I think the other thing, you know, if we can get this cap raised for the other products, is looking at, you know, the caps on marketing. Is it fair to limit swine to 32,000 head or 10,000 head per endorsement? Well, if we get more money under the cap, maybe we can look at expanding that as well and make sure that the products fit the market structure of the industry. So I think that's really what that we're looking at here in the Farm Bill.
All right. Well, John, thank you very much for this great information and for your perspective on this important topic.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
And now that we've learned more about these programs, let's hear from someone on the ground right here in Iowa who offers these insurance products directly with farmers. Keith Johnson has been an insurance agent with Farm Bureau Financial Services for 18 years. Keith operates out of his office in Manchester, Iowa, and works directly with farmers selling livestock insurance products. So, Keith, which livestock insurance products do you have experience selling?
Well, I first started out with LGM swine, which was the only product that they offered to start with. And then I have also sold LGM dairy, LRP feeder cattle, fed cattle, and sheep.
All right. So knowing that you're working with farmers on a regular basis, Keith, do you feel that many farmers are familiar with these programs?
Most farmers don't even know these programs exist, and if they do, they don't understand them. Most have not taken time to understand them. Did have a success with LGM dairy, in which the field men went out to the co-ops went out to their dairy herds and told those people about this program, got enough interest in them that kind of took off. Other products like the swine and feeder cattle, fed cattle, it's a word of mouth and it's not working in a very big proportion, like John has indicated in his statistics.
Okay. Now, given your experience, do you find that these are effective risk management programs for livestock producers? And are these programs working?
They can be effective if the producer takes the time and understands how they work and how his operation works. And it does make them better marketers because it forces them to look at some of the inputs, like in the LGM, the corn and soybean meal, and the price that's going to go on in the future. The dairy, the swine LGM, and the LRP cattle have had successes in those.
Wonderful. Now, John shared some of the shortcomings of the program, so we'd like to ask you, do you feel that availability, complexity, and eligibility are problems with these programs?
Yeah, I'm taking I'll vote for John's statement. There is a problem with being able to manage your risk. We talked earlier that, you know, like the dairy, the milk price, that I only get an opportunity once a month to do that. And the market's swinging, and I have no ability to protect myself. Same thing happens in the swine. And LRP is the only way that they can do that on a daily basis. But LGM, they're too limited, and it gets too complex. Way too many people think this is too hard and just ignore it.
Fair enough. We asked John the same question, so we'd like to ask you as well. In your opinion, how could these programs be improved to be effective and more widely available?
Well, I'm second in his. They need to be more available. I mean, I can buy LGM at a more regular time. The LGM dairy, they were always being capped out. There's plenty of guys that try to jump in, and then all of a sudden, the government had shut that program down. So then they lose interest because, you know, they don't know when till the government's going to give them back money. They need to also address the endorsement times and how I get paid in each endorsement time. I'm paying premium by the month. I should be able to collect by the month, but the collection is done by the whole endorsement, and when I have losses, they could be offset by gains, and I'm protecting my product. I'm not, and it's just too short of a period of time that I lose on.
Okay. A lot of great information shared here, and before we conclude with both of you, John and Keith, we'd like to thank you for your time, and are there any final thoughts or anything additional that you'd like to add before we conclude our segment with you?
You start with me?
We'll go ahead and start with Keith.
Oh, sorry about that.
I'm saying that there's a lot of work that needs to be done. John pointed those out, and that those programs should be addressed, and I'm 100% behind the fact that the livestock industry is getting a short stick here compared to the crop insurance, and the livestock industry is, as John pointed out, is as big as the crop insurance. Crop crop insurance is working because of the support it gets. Livestock insurance should have the same support.
Thank you, Keith. John, is there anything else that you would like to add or any other final thoughts?
I agree 100% with what Keith just said. Livestock, you know, is an equal partner in the ag economy with grain farmers, and we're one of their biggest customers, to be honest, because we purchase so much for animal feed. So I think livestock needs an adequate safety net, and we need to make the investment in insurance tools for the ag sector. And I think, you know, we talked a lot about cattle, swine, and dairy, but frankly, you know, we need to do something on the poultry side as well. We just have to recognize and, you know, the market structures of each of these industries, knowing that they're different. And how do we structure an insurance policy with appropriate cost-sharing features from the government that allows farmers to proactively manage their risk?
All right. Thank you for that, John. So as you can see, this is an issue that has many avenues for reform, all of which could have an effect on a farmer's bottom line, the cost of the farm bill, and could have a significant impact on the entire livestock industry. As you think about the information provided in this recording, please also consider the following policy development questions, which will be discussed by your County Farm Bureau. One, are adequate risk management programs available for livestock producers? Two, do you believe the federal government should be more involved and provide additional assistance through livestock insurance programs? Three, are changes necessary to improve the LGM and LRP programs? What changes would improve the programs? Four, should the federal government provide premium subsidies for livestock insurance? And five, should livestock insurance be sold more frequently to increase accessibility? In closing, I would encourage you to read more about these issues on the policy development section of the Iowa Farm Bureau website. Thank you for listening to this recording and for your ongoing participation in the Iowa Farm Bureau policy development process. It's your grassroots participation that gives Farm Bureau its strength.